This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, every once in a while, an idea so revolutionary erupts, so basic, that when you see it, you say, why didn't somebody think of that before? Well, that's what I said when I got my first look at a radical new subway map of New York City. It's not the official map, but an idea in which the multicolored subway lines, they don't thread through the city like lost strands of spaghetti. They don't defy you to trace their winding ways with an outstretched finger, but rather they flow smoothly and predictably to and from their destinations in an easy-to-read typeface. And this experimental map showed New York subway as a circle. Yeah, how many different ways can you make a subway map? How can we make them all better? It's just one of the ideas scientists have put forward for improving transit map design. Can we use what we've learned about human vision to make maps more readable? You know, you're in the subway, you're running by the map, you want to see where you're going, the train's coming. Can you take a quick look at it? Can we make a map that's better to look quickly at and cut the time down? Can we run test figures to figure out what actually helps people on their journey from point A to point B? Well, my next guests are tackling those questions and more, so let me introduce them. Ruth Rosenholz is a principal research scientist in the Department of Brain and Cognitive Sciences at MIT. She joins us from Cambridge. Welcome, Ruth.
Hi, Ira.
Thank you. Max Roberts is a transit map researcher and lecturer in psychology at the University of Essex in the UK. He also designed a few maps himself, and he joins us from London. Welcome, Max.
Hello, Ira.
Two great cities with two great subway systems. And we want to ask our listeners, if they have any idea, if you have an idea how to make your local transit map better, easier to use, or can you suggest maps that you think hit that sweet spot between simplicity and complexity, give us a call. Our number, 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. You can also tweet us at SciFry. Max, you designed that circular New York subway map that I was talking about. How did you get an idea to make it into a circle?
I started off in London. In London, they'd opened up a brand new sort of circular line around the outskirts of central London, and there were people sort of trying out circles, and I thought they weren't doing it very well. So I tried something a bit more disciplined with perfect circles centered on one spot and spokes all radiating from one single place. And then I was astonished at the response I got in London. I was expecting all to say, "Oh, you've messed about with the map. That's horrible. Take it away." But in fact, a large number of people loved it. And I then sort of went on a world journey trying the map on different cities worldwide.
Hey, you know, and that's great, because even seasoned subway people like myself, you're standing there, and you know, New York City subways, it's like literally like spaghetti. You're trying to trace which train goes from New York to Brooklyn, whatever, and you can't really see it. And if you're in a rush, it's incredible. But Ruth, is that really reason enough to change a map because you want to save 5 minutes?
Well, it's a good question. There's a lot of different criterion that go into making something a good map or not a good map. There's things you could do from a human perception point of view to make it easier to quickly glance at the map and tell where you need to go.
What makes a transit map design different? You specialize, Ruth, in how we look at things, peripheral vision. When we look on a map, are we really using peripheral vision?
Oh, absolutely. And you can get an easy sense of this if you just poke a hole in a piece of paper and try, finding the path from one stop to another one that you need to go to. If you're only allowed to look through that hole in the piece of paper, it would be quite challenging.
Yeah.
About 99% of your visual field is peripheral, so you use it for a lot more than you're usually conscious of.
Right. And Max, what makes a transit map design different than, let's say, a regular above-ground cartography map?
Well, the map's trying to show you efficiently how everything's connected together. So in theory, you know your start and destination station, and you've got to sort of try and plan the route as quickly as possible, the most efficient way possible. I always say a standard geographical map shows you where the network is, but a good diagram shows you how the network works together.
Yeah. And Ruth, you spend a lot of time figuring out what stuff looks like in our peripheral vision. You said punch a hole in a piece of paper. Is that what you do, or do you do something a little more complex than that?
we certainly do introspect on what we see, and we certainly have punched holes of paper and actually looked at subway maps that way just to convince ourselves that you really did use peripheral vision. But so, for instance, another exercise you can do to get a sense of what peripheral vision is like, because we're not used to introspecting on our own peripheral vision, is you could, say, for instance, hold your hand up. I would say your open hand, so your fingers are extended. And then look a little bit to one side of your hand, and but then concentrate on your hand and look at what you see. And it can be quite a jumble. You know, you can't really see the shape of your hand. You know, for me, my fingers almost, it's not clear which finger attaches to which part of my hand. And yet I can see the, you know, the wrinkles on the back of my fingers and so on. So I'm getting lots of little detail, but it's jumbled and messed up somehow.
How did you end up applying your peripheral vision model to transit maps?
Well, in general, in my lab, we have sort of two things we're interested in. We're interested in just the basic science of human vision, which these days mostly means peripheral vision. But we're also interested in applying that to real-world problems like design. And transit maps are so cool for exactly the reasons that you've been saying. They can be really complex, and you're sort of allowed to design them in so many different ways, and they two people could do two completely different maps for the same transit system, which means there's a really rich place to study whether or not that design makes any difference.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of designs of transit maps. Max, you say that putting transit maps to a public vote, which one do we like to show people maps, might be the worst thing that a city could do.
Definitely. I've done lots of studies, and every single study, the correlation, you can measure people's opinions and you can measure real usability, accuracy, time to plan, time to find stations. And every single study I've ever run, the correlation between people's opinions on how good a map is and how good it really is a zero.
Hmm.
So people choose maps that they like, maps that they expect to see, maps which conform to how they think a good map should be designed. And sometimes that gets in the way if it's a map that's how they expect it to be, but it's actually very badly designed.
Of all the major metropoli, which map do you? Is there a map that sort of works the best? That
I've never seen a map I haven't wanted to fix somehow. There are some maps which are quite nice, generally for sort of smaller cities. I like the BART map in San Francisco. That's quite a nice, clean design. And St. Petersburg always comes up with good maps. But mostly cities I see, there's some pretty bad maps out there.
Yeah. Well,
I really like, you've mentioned Max's sort of circular maps, and I really like his, he's got this sort of swoopy, elegant, kind of elliptical map of the London tube system as well that I really like.
Mm-hmm. Now you put, Ruth, I know that what the Boston T map looks like, and you put that through your design test. What did you come up with? I'm afraid to ask.
That's right. Well, so we had a really interesting opportunity because, as you mentioned, the Boston system decided they were going to let people, of all things, vote for their next T map. And they had already gone through a whole ton of maps and picked six top candidates. And so, yes, we ran our algorithm on all six of those top candidates in addition to the current map. And, you know, some of them did quite well. None of them was really perfect, but you could see good things in almost all of them. And in fact, one of the ones that won was really quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 844-724-8255. Let's go to Daniel in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Daniel.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I've lived in a few different cities, and I lived in Denver, Colorado, who has a very good public transit system. And I actually worked at high school, and I taught students with disabilities to use access to public transit. I now live in Jacksonville, Florida, and it is incredibly frustrating for me because I like public transit, but the system is so wonky and it's hard to understand what's happening that I don't use it at all. Whereas in Denver, I used it all the time. Now I don't. And so along with that, I think the tool that gets used more often now is like the online trip planning tools. And since I've lived in Jacksonville, they've gone through three tools and all three of them have been relatively terrible. And it's just really frustrating to want to use public transit and feeling like the systems around it aren't built to allow me to.
Ruth or Max, any reaction?
I'm sort of It's a worldwide trend that transit systems are coming up with journey planners, especially on computers, and I think it's a very bad thing indeed, because if you're sort of always taking instructions about which trains or buses to use, then you don't learn about the network. So if the system ever fails, you've learned nothing, and quite often these systems aren't very good. But what I really hate is that quite often when a transit network creates a new computer journey planner, they'll actually bury their maps, make them impossible to find. It's almost as though now they've got their computer system, they want to stop people from using these aids, which might help them learn to use the network.
Ruth, you put one of Max's curvy maps of the London Tube through your peripheral vision model. How did it do?
So we both did that, and we had done the current tube map as well. And so you should understand, a lot of what the model will tell you is which parts of the map are you expect, given a particular place that you're currently looking, like, say, a particular subway stop, what part of the map do you expect to be kind of clear at a glance? And the parts that are clear at a glance will look very similar to the original map, and the parts that aren't clear at a glance to your peripheral vision will look much more sort of smeary and almost like you're seeing them through some sort of warped glass or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of what makes a map good is the more of the area that where the map is clear, according to the model, the better you expect to be able to sort of see how the network works. And there's definitely a much bigger area around the place where you're pointing your eyes in Max's sort of swoopy map than in the other London tube map that we were using that was clear. So even though in many ways Max is sort of violating a lot of the unwritten or maybe even written rules about how you're supposed to design a transit map, he'd done such a careful job of it, I think, that it really ended up being quite good visually.
One of the problems, I liked the circular map was just beautiful, but one of the trade-offs, it seems, is whether you have form or function sometimes. I mean, a lot of maps, you want to know where exactly the stop is in the city. And you want the geography to be exact. But sometimes in these new maps, it's sort of an approximation, just so you get cleaner lines and wider spaghetti to see the map better. But you're losing a little bit of the geographic specificity, aren't you?
Yeah,
yes, that's often the trade-off.
Yes, I try not to distort things too much. You can't take a map too far beyond people's comfort zones. And the current New York subway map, that's actually very geographically distorting anyway. And that's sort of worse in a way, because it looks as though it's geographically accurate, but actually it's sort of quite misleading in terms of scale and things. It might sort of have you walking a journey when it's a long, long way or the opposite. So, yes, if a map looks geographical but it's not, then it can trap you.
Yeah, Ruth, we asked our audience on Twitter, what's the easiest transit map to use? And we got a winner, and it was Washington, D.C.'s Metro.
Yes, that's right, which we then also ran our algorithm on.
Yeah.
It did do quite well.
Let me remind everybody that this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And it did well. It's very similar looking to BART's system. I think they're the same designers who created both systems.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so one thing that's interesting about that, speaking of the geographic stuff, is they had tried to make some of the parks quite visible, which, of course, are very important landmarks in D.C., and they had also made some icons for some standard tourist kind of destinations. And those actually survived very well. In addition, quite a few of the subway lines were reproduced well in peripheral vision, according to the model. If you had to point to one thing that's perhaps not ideal in that map, according to the model, it's that there's a blue line, and there's also a river that's almost the same shade of blue, which is quite confusing. I think perhaps not only in peripheral vision, I was confused for a moment myself as to whether part of the river might be a subway line.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Colin in Washington, speaking of that Washington subway. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I am a user experience designer by trade, so I work on usability for websites and mobile apps and those kinds of things. And I was wondering, to ask the guest, what does the medium of the map, so the way the user is actually looking at it, how has your research sort of determined what impact that has, right? So, like, if someone, are there more things we can do on a mobile phone, for example, that we couldn't do on a paper map that you might find, you know, in a metro station?
Good question. Ruth, you want to take that first?
Yes, I think for sure. I mean, one thing that might be in between going to a full-on, we'll just, you don't need to see a map, we'll just tell you where to go, and having a map is that if you have a mobile device or a computer, it could keep the whole map there, but it could sort of highlight and make more salient the part of the map that you need to care about. And that might turn out to be a good idea, for instance.
You know, what we're doing with, and I tried this with Siri before I came on the air. I asked Siri to take me out to Flushing, you know, from Manhattan here. And Siri painted me a nice subway map on the number 7 train, and which would be exactly the right way to go. No other ways of going were suggested. There were other routes. And so it seems like what we're doing is following what we do with our cars. We don't look at paper maps anymore, right? We just put the GPS in there, and we have no idea of the scale of what we're doing or where we're going. We just follow those directions.
That is often a problem with these small screens.
We have quite narrow roads in Britain, and we quite often get lorries getting stuck in country lanes, and they literally get jammed in, and they can't get them out again, and the sort of police have to come and help them back out. I mean, yes, you can rely on sat-nav and all these aids if you want, but it's sort of possibly not advisable to rely on them too much. You might be missing out on bad things, or you might be missing out on sort of tricks that the computer doesn't realize you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it seems like this is sort of the future. That I'm using the car analogy. More and more people are using that. Do we have to make better apps then for mass transit?
Well, it all depends on what you want people to do. If you just want to get from A to B by the way they're told to do, then yes, right, give them apps. But if you want people to learn about the city, how it fits together, that, you know, the whole city. You know, when I was young, I sort of in my teens, I used to use a huge London bus map, just learn every square inch of London. It's quite a sort of achievement when you're a teenager, just go out and explore like that. And I don't think I'd have learned nearly so much. And you know, it's turned out to be useful knowledge. It's your big cities, it's good to know where all the neighborhoods are and how to navigate them.
I think there is absolute beauty in looking at a big map of things, no matter what it is. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more in the science of design, map design, Ruth Rosenholz and Max Roberts. Your questions, 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour on the science of map design and what makes a good subway map. We've got some tweets coming in. Let's tweet from Jeff, who says, I'm still waiting for a colorblind-friendly transit map. Mm. How about that one? And people writing in saying, I live both in New York and San Francisco. They have equally bad designs. I've traveled all over the world. Someone else says, in Tokyo. They think Tokyo has the best transit map. So Madrid is pretty good, someone says. Let's talk about one of your map studies, Max, about you designed what you called a curvy map of Paris. Why did you do that?
Yes, it's like the London curvy map. I mean, there's one of the things a transit map should do is make things simple. It should take sort of complicated, twisting routes in real life and actually make them sort of simple straight lines so they're easy to follow. And the trouble with the official Paris map is it doesn't do that. It takes the complexities of reality and then turns it to zigzags instead. So it's not actually simplified Paris. It's just changed the shape of the complexity. So my reasoning was, well, let's, you know, all these harsh zigzags, you know, 16 corners from end to end on line 4, you know, just try and smooth them out. Just try and ease out the shape, you know, give Paris a bit of shape, show the loop lines and everything. Mm-hmm. And that curvilinear map's actually very good. It's every time we compare it against the official map, it comes out as sort of 50% faster. So a journey it takes 30 seconds to plan on the official map, a user can do that in 20 seconds on the curvilinear map. But even so, the curvilinear map's not popular because people say, well, it's obviously the wrong way to design a map, so it must be hard to use. But it's actually wrong. It's the it's the easier map.
Huh. And how did your Paris curvy map do in your testing? You said it was a lot faster? How much faster was it?
50% faster.
50%? That's pretty good.
Yes.
And that's, when you say faster, that's how much faster you could just look at the map and see where you want to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the time to plan a journey, and when you think about all the tourists in Paris, that's those sort of extra seconds add up to sort of thousands of years every year.
Ruth, you put one of Max's Kirby maps of the London Tube through your peripheral vision model.
Yes, that's right.
Did it love it?
So we had it. We did the model as if you were looking at one of the stops in central London, figuring that that would be sort of a reasonable scenario and so on. And often we think of it as if these big straight lines are the best for maps. But I think if you do these curvy lines in the right way, you can be as good or better as having a bunch of just straight lines in the map. It did quite well.
Now let's go to the phone, see if we can get a quick call in from Matt in Baltimore. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey there.
I'm a huge fan of Science Friday. I actually lived in Seoul for a couple of years ago, and one of the things that I really liked about their metro system maps was when you were actually on the train, there was a different entire map to display just the area, just the line that you were on. So each line had its own shape, and it was reflected on the independent map inside of the train. So I lived on the Green Line, which is the circular line in Seoul. So I got to know really well the shape of the city from going off of my line and then further out into each different line that was crossing.
But you could see other subway lines meeting yours?
Yeah, you would only see the connections, though. You wouldn't actually have to look at all of the different stations that were coming off of it. You would just see those independent lines.
Oh, thanks for that call. You know, one of the things about these connections, Max and Ruth, is there are these little white dots, you know, for like black dots, and they're tiny little dots. These are almost impossible to make out when you're running very quickly. Is there a better system than that?
So in the Boston contest for the T-Maps, we saw a couple of interesting alternatives. I mean, first of all, I think some of them had really nice kind of large dots showing the stops. And in fact, you can see that in the DC Metro maps, that they're actually very salient. And again, the model predicts that they're actually visible from quite far away. And another map had little bumps on the side of the line instead of holes in the middle of the line. And you might not think that would necessarily make such a big difference, but those bumps are very visible in peripheral vision. And furthermore, they actually seem to help by not having holes in the line along the one of the lines. It keeps it from sort of breaking up.
Yeah, well, we're going to wait for the ultimate subway maps. I think we'll have to wait a little bit longer because it's going to take a while. Ruth Rosenholz, Principal Research Scientist in the Department of Brain and Cognitive Sciences at MIT. Max Roberts, Transit Map Researcher, Lecturer in Psychology, University of Essex in the UK. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can see all the maps we talked about today on our website. Go to sciencefriday.com/transitmaps.